I'm Joe.
I'm Lawrence.
Shorty.
I'm Shogun.
Yeah, but on your website, but on your website, you're like low show bow and go, right? Isn't it, or something like that? Yeah. Show low go snow. Yep. Something. You can't spell your names.
No. There is a reason because of that is.
You ran out of type space on MySpace.
No, we actually wanted to obscure our real identities because we don't have a work permit to play shows in America. I guess originally it was myself on drums and Lawrence playing guitar, and we were just sort of probably for about 6 months in 2008 just jamming music, and you know, without any bass or vocals at that point, and just sort of, I guess, trying to write songs, the songs we wanted to write, but it took a while to even get to that point because I guess we all played in lots of bands, but none of them have been quite like this one. And I think we had to sort of, it took a while. And I'm actually not that, I'm kind of still, I'm not someone who's drummed for 10 years. I've probably only drummed for like started drumming a year before that. So I'm quite new and self-taught. So it took a while to even get to that point, I suppose.
Actually, I'll go back a bit further than that. There's a bit of a stroke of luck. Me and Shorty got together. We met at a club. Yeah, maybe about a year and a half. And I just broke up with my old band. Shorty was jamming with somebody, but I don't think it was going anywhere. Yeah, but we got talking one night. Started talking about a few records we liked. And we're like, ooh, let's get together and jam out a few songs. And that's how it started.
I'm not the original bass player. I joined after about 3 months, 4 months after these guys started playing. And they played a show and I was like, these guys are terrible. I can totally clean up this act. I came through and I was like, look, if you guys are interested, I mean, I've got some skills playing bass. So
what part of that is true and what part of that is wrong? Maybe the option, but
now
I have to ask.
No, they're actually a really great band, and I saw them and I was like, damn, I want to be in that band. So I'd never played bass before, but I'd sort of become friendly with these guys, and I was like, dude.
Have you played an instrument?
I played guitar before.
In another band, I take it.
Yeah. But I hadn't played guitar very well. But anyway, so I'd never played bass, and I was like, look, you've got to let me in the band. And eventually, we went out and we got drunk one night, and they decided that it was a good idea. And I went to practice for the first time, and I played on Lawrence's bass, and I had to borrow his bass because I didn't have one. And somehow they decided to let me in the band. And then that was the beginning of the real Royal Edict.
The true story is Joe lied about being able to play the bass. He'd never seen one before, but we played. It was an in-store at Repressed Records, and he came up afterwards and said, man, you want me to walk it, I'll walk it all day. Like, he'd probably never seen a bass guitar before. But now he's really good. He's a good bassist. I sort of just came along when these two, and this other guy, the old bassist, the three of them have been playing for a bit. And they were, like, rehearsing with a friend of theirs, but it didn't really seem to be going anywhere, and I just really joined maybe to help them write songs because I heard the demo tape. I thought it sounded really good, but I started like writing words to the songs, and I sort of started getting real involved with it all. And emotionally involved. And you know, when you do something and you pretend to yourself that you're not doing it, but you are. Like I said, well, look, I'll just come and be like sing some guide vocals at the practice, and I was pretending I was still helping, but I guess subconsciously I knew I was kind of like usurping this other vocalist. And I hope, you know, yeah, it was a bit grim that way.
Australia is a really interesting situation compared to the US because it's even farther. And so, but there is a huge scene there. And I forget who it was I interviewed recently, but they were talking about the Sydney music scene and how it's one of the toughest music scenes in existence because there are 8 quadrillion bands. There are, you know, a lot of places to play. But once you do that, you kind of have to say, okay, well, we'll tour Melbourne, we'll tour Brisbane, and then we'll go down the line to Adelaide, and then we're playing, you know, really small places. I know you raised some funding to get over here. We now know you did it illegally, but this is a pretty tight album, and it is pretty melodic, and it is, you know, as records go, Triple J doesn't have to play everything. by any stretch of any, you know, anyone's imagination. So tell me what's been going on so far over there and then over here, and kind of what your, like, what your vision is for the band, you know? Who wants to start on that?
I don't know. It's hard to, we had no intentions for anything to happen outside of, like, our practice space. We just get together and we play and it's fun. And I don't know, like, it's just fun to keep making the best music that we possibly can. We didn't, like, all the stuff that's happened to us, we haven't searched any of it out. People get in contact with us, like, the same way that you did. You got in contact with us, the same thing happens. But it's like, you know, the level that we're operating on is just completely different. There's no places to play, no clubs to play, and it's just tough, I guess. But you just do it, you know. We're all a part of, I guess, a pretty tight group of friends that...
Well, basically, yeah, there's sort of a whole bunch of friends that play in bands. We're all supportive of each other and we put on shows for each other. And it's quite... It's like a lot of people have contacted us over the last sort of 12 months outside of that, who, you know, you want to play this show, you want to play with this touring American band. And a lot of like things like, you know, Triple J, it's like people that have just come to our shows and have, you know, enjoyed it and then have sort of maybe word of mouth is spread. But it's we've never had a manager, we've never had any of that type of industry type of connection. We like to maintain control of everything ourselves, and I guess just see what happens. I mean, we don't have a, you know, a 5-year plan or anything like that at this point. We're just doing it and because it's fun and because we love making music, so it's pretty simple, really.
I think all I ever wanted to prove with this band is that, you know, you don't have to look like a dickhead to play rock and roll, and you can just look like a normal person and act like one. But I think, with all respect, you probably, or maybe a few people are a bit misinformed about Sydney or Australia, just in that there's actually very few venues and increasingly few. They're all getting shut down. No one really cares about rock and roll music in Sydney. Like, poker machines are basically filling up venues where stages used to be. It's still happening, or they're being turned into yuppie club pubs. Australian music blows. Like, Australian music was obviously fantastic until about... Am I allowed to swear or should I stop? Yeah, there's some good groups in Australia. Not all that many. I'd probably say there's about 10 in the entire country. And I think... it's more or less a reaction to how mundane the music's been probably since like the early 90s, in my opinion.
I think Brisbane in the late 70s, you know, with the Saints, the Riptides, even, but then the Go-Betweens, I think that was one of the most fertile musical cities. And that was a reaction, you know, obviously to, you know, Bjelke Petersen and an oppressive, you know, state government regime, where there was a reaction with, you know, there's been books written about this, and, you know, I just think there was some incredible music made back then, as well as in, even in Perth around the same time, the Victims, who later became, you know, members went on to the Hoodoo Gurus. What other good bands were there? I guess there was some cool kind of post punk bands, Sydney, or like X, for example, the Australian X. I think they're one of the most ferocious sort of punk rock and roll, whatever you want to call it, bands ever. Their first two albums are, I don't think anything comes close to them personally. To sound patriotic, but I think they're absolutely incredible bands.
From what I can tell, this record is out in Australia and France.
We're a risk. I think if you're talking about if we've been approached by anybody, like labels and such, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
No, I think maybe they might hear a tune or two of ours and think, you know, oh, maybe. And then they'll go to our shows. They'll see how we behave, the way we play. We're not clean, you know. We're a mess. Like, we want to stay a mess.
Well, I think there's been a lot of the shows on this tour that we've organized in different cities like Chicago, Minneapolis, different towns have come from really small boutique little labels that have contacted us over the last couple of years going, oh, do you want to do a 7-inch, blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, yep. And we're a type of band that when we record something, it usually takes about a year and a half for actually to be at a point where we can put it out. So we're like, oh, we're not that good with recording, but by the way, we're thinking of coming to the States. Can you set up a show for us and things like that? So we have been approached by a few different smaller labels to maybe put out a 7-inch or something like that. But if that's all we did and all we had, imagine you get up every morning, all you had time to do or is just to think about the show that night or writing a song, I think it would kind of become not as special. Although this is just me thinking that, but there'd be nothing to sing about. I like it as this thing that balances out my life, and it's something to look forward to, and I feel quite a cathartic release when you know we practice or when we play. It's important to me, and I wouldn't want to potentially jeopardize that.
I still see it's like it's purely fun. It's just like we get together on the weekends, we jam with some songs, drink some beers, eat some food, and just have fun. That's what I always thought the band was, and it still is, just having fun. And that's all I want to do with it.
Yeah, and write good songs.
Yeah. It's not even writing good songs isn't really my main focus. It's like just hanging out with these dudes. That's an important part of my life, and I love it. And yeah, as long as that still keeps happening, I'll be happy.
People might, you know, play it at parties and go nuts with their friends and like jump off the coffee table and like smash things, or they might like play it in their bedroom and have those weird private kind of experiences. Like, I really wanted to make a record that would reach, you know, a couple of people, but in my head, like, the furthest I would like it to go would just be like, you know, maybe like 50 to 80 people in a room, and we're playing, you know, they're all like enjoying themselves and kind of just cutting loose a little bit. I think any bigger than that, it just gets stupid. You lose contact with your audience, you lose intimacy, and there's just no point. I don't think we're good enough to go anywhere, and I don't really want to be good enough. I think, in as far as I've seen, maybe 15 years ago there was a bit more leeway. I like really, really big groups from the mid-90s, like Oasis. I think they're cool. But I think those were the last decent rock bands to get anywhere. I mean, I really think to make it now, you have to stink. You know, you have to play just total pap. And that's not why I started out playing music at all.
So coming into this point where, for the first time, I'm in a band that has starting to get interest from a whole bunch of different places, and so I'm always a little bit cautious about what their real objectives are. If it's just money, if you can trust people, if you can do that, and maybe it's a very one-dimensional, shallow view, but that's always been where I've come from. So that comes down to why we wanted with this band manage it and do it ourselves, because you know it's easy that we probably do get ripped off all the time and things like that, but it's sort of people were just naive to it, so it's just that's why I don't think in 2011, unless you completely compromise your music and things like that you could ever actually get to a level where you would make money, you know, to live off it. I don't see that as a reality. I mean, so that's why if we just view it as what we're doing, writing songs and take that out of our minds, then we can write the best songs we want to write. That's how I feel.
But one of the things that I saw, which will be interesting, and I forget if it was on your blog or on your Twitter, that you said you flew over LA and it didn't look like any, I don't know which one of you wrote this.
Oh, this is probably me.
But you flew over LA and you kind of didn't, it didn't look like any place that you'd ever seen before, and you were wondering if it was a real city of any sort. So let me fill you in. It is a couple of million people. The American film industry is basically headquartered there. Well, we'll get to the real in a second. Now, what club are you playing in LA?
Oh, we're not playing a club.
We're just playing a record store.
So you're playing a record store in LA. So what is your, but you've never been there.
Oh, I don't know. The whole of America has just been like, feels like we're on a movie set or something. You know, every single person you see, it's like, what? I don't know. It's just really confusing.
Tell
and it's,
more about that.
Well,
perception.
In terms of like, just people and personalities is completely opposite to the way, you know, the way that we work. I don't know. I It's just, you know, there's details, there's things, is the way that people react to things, the relaxed nature of people. San Francisco has probably been the closest, I feel, to Australia, to Sydney, Australia. And I don't know why that is. It's probably just because everyone's a bit more relaxed here.
American people seem really alarmed by subjective opinions. If you're not talking about where something happened or how it happened, like if it's not all total concrete, if you give an opinion of something, which is kind of personal and a little abstract, they'll just look at you as though you haven't said anything. American people, it's not a good or bad trait. Maybe Australian people carry this more European introspective nature, and American people are more, they're probably more realistic, but they're more externalized. That's what I've noticed. That's my experience. Probably it's probably a good trait, really. Yep. I think Australians, probably it's an easier way of life. Maybe we have more time to sort of drift with our heads in the clouds a little bit.
Yeah, I found that too. I mean, it's just a difference. But essentially, I'm not a totally introverted guy. I can talk to people, whatever. But it's just the intensity of. I mean, maybe it. I'm generalizing. Just maybe New York and a few other places where everyone's on this other level of energy when they're talking, and that's cool. And maybe it's just because I'm having fleeting moments with so many different people. But to maintain that, it's so exhausting. I think Australians are a lot more down here in terms of. You know what I mean? We're pretty mellow. Maybe it's a cliche of how the Australian culture is, but it's just it's cool. But at some moments I've been quite exhausted just even interacting with so many different Americans because it's got this intensity. Maybe that's what we're lacking in Australia. I don't know. It's just different, but it's been cool. But it's just been sometimes overwhelming, but sometimes awesome.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs is the bread. And songs by anybody else you want to play in between.